On your mark. Get set. Go! Run up there. Keep walking. Keep walking. Grab the flag. Pass it over there.
Yes, he's best known for hosting Double Dare, a huge success.
We thought it was good, but I never thought it was going to go 525 episodes.
But he's also been a host on the Food Network and so much more. His career, it's much more than just green slime.
Mr. Mark Summers.
It's all I ever wanted to do. I really didn't, you know, want to be a doctor, a lawyer, although my parents wanted me to do that, I never did.
And now, years later, he's fulfilling another dream, his own one-man show.
And apparently people are relating to many of the topics that I'm talking about.
Mark Summers on The Pulse.
So stay tuned.
Guys, welcome to another episode of The Pulse. You know what we do. We've got people who are doing cool things. They've got great stories, and they're spending time with us. And we've got somebody who has kind of blazed a trail, done a bunch of different things. No, it's cool because you kind of set up the path that a lot of us either looked to or wanted to do. Mr. Mark Summers, actor, host, what else? Motivational speaker.
Orthopedic shoe salesman. I'll do anything. You know, it's interesting. I love hearing the fact that people your age who grew up watching the show say they got in this industry because they saw the fun we were having back in the Nickelodeon days, and they kind of wanted to emulate that. So that's a big compliment when I hear that.
It's cool because it is. And I mean, I'm not that funny, you know. And
so it never stopped me. Trust me.
I'm not sure that I could do things like that, but it did. And do you hear this a lot? Like the concept of doing what you were doing then and throughout could actually be a career. Like, inspired people.
That is peculiar to think about. But also, Nickelodeon did a lot of research back in the day and found out that kids did not have their own game show, and that kids were living vicariously watching Price is Right with their parents. And so they went to playgrounds and talked to kids. And they were playing a game called Truth or Dare at the time, mm-hmm. which became Double Dare. And they found out that kids were being rewarded at home by keeping their room neat and clean and doing everything perfectly. And now we were rewarding them for getting messy. And we kind of took the other side of what the parents wanted them to do, and it just clicked magically.
Do you ever think that was it? But, and a lot of people know you from that, but look at your bio and you do some research and you've done a lot.
Done a few things.
Some of the most known shows out there. You have your own show, and we'll talk about that shortly. Did you ever think it would grow into this?
No. You know, you're lucky if you get a job. Secondly, if you get a game show or a talk show and it lasts 13 weeks, you figure, well, it's going to get canceled and I'll never do this again. Mm-hmm. So when we did the first 65 of Double Dare, right here in Philadelphia, down the street at WHYY, mm-hmm. We thought it was good, but I never thought it was going to go 525 episodes. And then we toured it all around the country, playing 20,000-seat arenas and selling them out the Palace of Auburn Hills twice in a weekend, that kind of thing. And I had no idea. I was 34 when I got that job, and I was one step out the door because I didn't think it was going to happen. And at age 34 and getting on Nickelodeon changed my life.
Wow. I want to update some of the folks because we talked about it before we came on. We are, for the people who are watching on TV, Fox 29, Fox Local, Fox Soul nationally, we are also streaming this. So we're streaming live behind the scenes, and we wanted to let people know on Fox Local because I think it's kind of cool for them to get to see how all of this happens behind the scenes.
Behind the scenes, yeah.
So there's like cameras behind the cameras.
And yet, this is not too different from back in the day when I started, except the equipment is much smaller and much better than these gigantic cameras. When I started on a show called Romper Room in Indianapolis when I was 5 years old, and the cameras wouldn't fit in this room, and they were so gigantic. Technology is a lot different.
So we jumped around a little bit, kind of starting with the big stuff, and I want to revisit I had no idea you're doing 20,000-seat arenas on tour. Like that's
like being a rock star for kids.
Right. And hosting a kids show that adults kind of like got a cult following, but 20,000 seat arenas for a game, that's still unheard of.
Yeah, it's nuts. Nobody really has done it before or since. It was just a magical time. We started to play malls, and we would get 5,000 people to show up at a mall, which meant that the entrance to Macy's or any of the major department stores were blocked. and the people who were in the malls were complaining. And somebody suggested, well, if we have this many people come to a mall, why don't we start doing theaters? And I was blown away when I walked out and saw that many people.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it was neat.
All right, so you talked about Romper Room. You talked about the early stages. How did you get into this? Like, what is the path to Mark Summers' life?
I grew up watching The Ed Sullivan Show, and I would see the stand-up comics, and it was a variety show where they would have singers, dancers, but stand-up comics, and I was intrigued by that. I came home from school when I was in sixth grade, and on ABC there was a show called Who Do You Trust, and the host was Johnny Carson. Okay. And I was obsessed with Johnny at an early age. And then he took over The Tonight Show, and when my parents went to bed, I would sneak back down at age 11 or 12 and watch The Tonight Show. And I found out that Johnny started his career as a magician. And I thought, well, if Johnny did that, maybe I should do that. So I started doing magic. And there was a magic club in my junior high, and I learned from there. Next thing I know, I was doing birthday parties and, you know, weddings and dog shows and wakes and whatever else I could. And I got on a kid's show doing magic. And I said to the lady after the first time, you know, I have a lot more stuff. Can I come back on a regular basis? So every two or three weeks, I was doing magic on a kid show in Indy. And I said, wow, this is a cool way to make a living. Then I was walking down the street in Indianapolis. Excuse me. There was a national magic convention. And a guy came up and said, I want to learn magic. How do I do magic? And I said, well, what do you do? And he said, I'm a disc jockey. And I said, if you teach me how to be a disc jockey, I'll teach you how to do magic. And the next thing I know, I'm doing weekends 6 to 11 at WBMP in Elwood, Indiana. I was 15 years old. And when I left WBMP, Dave Letterman took my place.
Really?
Yeah, he was living in Indianapolis, and they needed somebody. And I was too young to drive, and my driver went away. The guy who was working with me left, and I had no way to get there. My parents wouldn't drive me, wow. So Letterman took my place.
Wow. So you stepped aside, and you're like, eh, I got things to do, Dave. Like,
that's right. I don't know whatever happened to him.
You handle this one. who was that guy?
I don't know.
Wow. All right. So even then, so you got started young doing this,
but
it seems like young – you knew this was kind of the path, which makes, like, it's odd to me.
Is it really?
It is that you, not that you were interested in entertainment and in the business at a young age, but that you kind of saw that young, let me carve out the path, let me take the necessary steps, and inspired by a host and comedian and magician. Like, you blazed the path that you wanted to follow.
It's all I ever wanted to do. I really didn't, you know, want to be a doctor, a lawyer, although my parents wanted me to do that, I never did. And, it was pretty cool. And I moved to Los Angeles. I went to school in Boston. I went to L.A. in 1973 and started working in a club called the Magic Castle. And you had to audition. And I was working 28 shows a week, making $145. That's all. And it was crazy. But thrilled to do it. And then I was a page at CBS Television City to kind of help pay the bills. And then I became a regular at the Comedy Store in 1976, along with Dave and Jay, Gary Shandling, Robin Williams. A whole bunch of us started in that genre of comics. And I realized quickly I wasn't very good at it.
I feel like we've had several comics who have come in on the show, on The Pulse. And for most of them, the recurring theme is that you really had to love it because you weren't making any money.
Zero. Yeah.
And it was, and you're telling the same story. Like, Don D.C. Curry was here not that long ago, and he was talking about at the end, he thought he I got this. I got multiple shows. And at the end of it, he ended up owing the comedy club money because his bar tab
was
more than he was getting paid.
Well, you know, that was an issue back in the day. And I was part of the Comedy Store strike where the comics struck Mitzi Shore, who owned the place, because she was making all this money and they were paying us nothing. And if we played just the little room, we'd get $10. But if we played the main room, we got a percentage of the gate, and sometimes I'd make $80 or $90 for the night. Now, my rent back in the day was $125 a month. It was a little bit different back in 1973, 74. But still, the owners were the ones who were getting all the money. And today, if you want to work in a club, the first thing the owner says to you is, how many people can you bring in? Because if you don't bring in 25 people, we're not paying you. So it's the worst business in the world. You want to do it so bad that you're willing to sacrifice friendships and sometimes have to pay your own tab just to work and get in front of an audience.
Just quick acknowledgement of our Fox 29 live and local audience. We're giving you a behind the scenes as we are filming The Pulse. This, of course, is Mr. Mark Summers, who is sharing his story. We decided to bring you in on the whole thing.
Hi there.
okay, right? It's cool stuff. All that behind the scenes, the training, the trailblazing, the radio, the comedy. When did you know that this was a career? This was the path that you were going to stay on?
I started to do warm-ups on TV shows. When I was a page, I worked on the Mary Tyler Moore Show and Bob Newhart. And there was a man by the name of Lorenzo Music, who, if you remember the Rhoda Show, he played Carlton, the doorman. He did the best warm-up I've ever seen in my entire life. And I went into his office. I had no fear of seeing or talking to anybody. And the one thing I learned about show business is you have to lie. And I went into his office and I said, you know, I do warm-ups. And he said, really, what shows? And I made up things that I never did. And he said, well, give me your number. And someday if I can't do a warm-up, I'll call you. Okay, great. Well, 2 weeks later, the phone rings. And they were doing a pilot with a guy by the name of Barnard Hughes, a Broadway star called Doc on CBS. And he said, I can't do it. Can you fill in for me? And I said, sure. Well, I was pooping my pants, Bill, because I had never done it before. I didn't know what to do. And I wrote stuff down, and I did magic, and I did a little stand-up. And at the end of the night, Grant Tinker, who ran Mary Tyler Moore Productions and was married to Mary Tyler Moore, came down the stairway, threw his arms around me, and said, that may be the best warm-up I've ever seen in my entire life. By the way, I had no idea what I had just done for the last 3 or 4 hours. And it opened up a door for me. So I became, first I did a variety show called The Mac Davis Show. Then I did Shields and Yarnell. And then I worked on a show called Soap, which at the time was the hottest sitcom. And everybody came to see me. Now, when I was doing the warm-ups on Soap, stage next to me was Bosom Buddies, and Bob Saget was doing the warm-up on that. And the stage to the left of me was Barney Miller, and David Letterman's doing the warm-up on Barney Miller.
Dude just kept following you around.
It was amazing. So we all got our start that way. And I did, at one point, I was doing Tuesday night, Alice. Wednesday during the day, Hour Magazine. Wednesday and Thursday night, I did Star Search. Friday, I did Soap. Soap got canceled. I did Webster. Webster got canceled. I did What's Happening Now. Game shows on the weekends. So I was working 6 days a week, asking people where they're from and telling them when to applaud, and it was paying handsomely.
That's amazing.
It was crazy.
Wow, that's cool.
I was making six figures in 1979, asking silly questions to an audience.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. And behind the scenes, we're carrying around a phone and a selfie stick.
That's hysterical.
Thanks for that.
That's hysterical.
Like, appreciate you coming. Like, you know.
Thanks. I love it.
Thanks so much. Like, there's a quote that I throw up on Instagram that if somebody offers you an amazing opportunity, you don't know how to do it, say yes and then figure it out.
100%. Never
Feels
say
like
no.
You did that?
Yeah.
And then they called your bluff and you're like, wait, I actually have to fly the plane?
That's
like,
right.
And it just worked for you.
It just worked for me, and I never did accept the word no. To me, no which just meant not yet. I'm not ready yet, or they don't think I'm ready yet, so I'm gonna keep moving forward. I had an executive at NBC told me that my name was too ethnic because my real name is Berkowitz, and that my nose was too big. And until I got my nose done and changed my name, he would never hire me. And in my mind, I thought, you know what? This guy will be here like another 6 months, and then I'll meet the next guy. And that was it. He got fired, and then I came in and, you know, finally got to the right people, and one thing after another happened. But you have to be determined. You cannot. That passion can drive you so much. But why is it? And we're going to talk about my one-man show, I know, a little bit later. But
yeah.
Part of it is overcoming obstacles. Why do some people just throw their hands up and give up, and other people just keep moving forward?
Somebody was – two things that I just got from that. One, that even then somebody was bold enough and ignorant enough to say that to you.
You're right.
And two, that you were strong enough to push through it. Like, both challenges that are to this day, you know, are challenges for people.
Correct, sir.
Yeah, that's interesting. All right, you talked about the one-man show.
Mm.
The life and slime of Mark Summers.
Right.
Okay. Tell us about this. How did this happen? Right.
I came to New York in 1964 and saw my first Broadway show, Fiddler on the Roof, and I'd never seen anything like that. When I grew up in Indiana, my parents never took me to that. And I thought, oh, my God, what is that, and how do I become a part of that? And so I always put it in the back of my mind, and I started to do local theater in Indianapolis when I grew up. And then I got into magic and one thing after another and went to school in Boston and started doing stand-up and all those other things. But in the back of my mind, I wanted to be on Broadway. That was just a goal I had.
Okay.
And I went through many obstacles in my life. First with obsessive compulsive disorder. Then I was in a car accident here in Philadelphia where I broke every bone in my face. And then I've had cancer a couple of times. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to a gentleman by the name of Bruce Valanche, who I hired years ago, first producing job. He's a great writer. And he was doing the leading role in Hairspray in New York on Broadway. And I started talking about doing theater. And he said, Summers, I've known you for 20 years. Stop talking about it and do it already. And found a way to get in Greece in Long Beach Island, New Jersey, and play Vince Fontaine. And when I was playing that part, I met a guy by the name of Drew Gasparini. And Drew wrote music but was in the show with me and introduced me to his friend, Alex Brightman. Alex Brightman now has been nominated for 2 Tonys. He was the star of School of Rock and also for Beetlejuice. And we started hanging around, and I said one night, I want to do a one-man show. And they interviewed me for a year and a half, just took notes. And at the end of that year and a half, Alex Brightman handed me a script and said, here's your one-man show. And first we did it in Bloomington, Indiana. Then we did the Adirondack Theater Festival. Little thing called COVID happened, and we stopped performing. Mm-hmm. And last January, I got a phone call that somebody wanted to bring the show back. And I thought, I'm almost 72 years old. I'm not sure I can even remember lines like 60, 70 pages. And we did it. And first we did it in Mount Gretna, Pennsylvania. And then in September, we did it in Buffalo, New York, at a place called Alleyway Theater. And the show was going well, but the Mrs. Doubtfire Tour opened up next door to us. And the director of the Doubtfire Tour came to see our show and said, have you ever thought of doing this in New York? And I said, every day, but I don't know anybody. He said, you do now. He made one phone call to the Schubert Organization, who connected me with a producer. And it was just crazy. 4 months later, we opened off Broadway in New York City.
Like, I completely get, in talking to you, why your life is a show, a book. I mean, it's
why?
Because it's entertaining, one.
Yeah.
It's absolutely inspiring. Like, you are continuing with a smile and determination while talking about some really challenging stories.
Yes, sir.
And I just think it's the kind of thing that will make people feel good, because it didn't stop you.
It never stopped
me. And you kept going.
The show's very emotional. I talk a lot about going through these things, and I do break down often. Not every night, but some nights I can't stop myself. And when we started writing the show, I said to Alex, if somebody walks in and doesn't know who Mark Summers is, the show and the story still has to be great. Yeah. And my goal was to make somebody cry. That was really my goal. And on night number one in Bloomington, I was able to do that. And I don't know enough about acting, but I've learned a lot doing this over the last 8 years. And when Alex Brightman came up to our opening night show, he came up to me and said, when did you learn how to act? And that was the best compliment in the world. It took me 8 years to kind of put the pieces together and figure it out. But it's really a solid show right now. And the fact that we got booked 16 weeks in New York City is mind-boggling to me.
He talked about, I want people who don't know who Mark Summers is to have some sort of interest in the show. I think it's an interesting point, because I obviously know who Mark Summers is, but I didn't know this.
Right.
You know, and some of the things that you're sharing, and the behind the scenes stories, and the people that you met, and the challenges that you faced. Like, I think that if the show is anything like this conversation, like, you spend the time going, wow, really? Like, oh, so here's how you connected the dots. So here's the things that you had to overcome. So I'm looking forward to it. But you touched on the challenges. Mm. You talked about OCD, and that can be, you know, crippling.
Yes.
Can be stifling. You talked about the challenges with cancer, the accident. That's always the hardest part to share, I guess. You know,
people
when
keep
you're
asking
doing those
me
stories.
That. I believe in really paying things forward. Mm-hmm. And through this show, we had a young lady on stage last night who told me about her OCD and just broke down and started to cry. Yeah. And apparently people are relating to many of the topics that I'm talking about. And they say it's very thought-provoking. And I had a woman who hired me first at Lifetime TV and then at Food Network. And she came to the show. And she said the other day, that show changed my life. I didn't know how to get through the last quarter of my life in the proper way. I was stifled. And by seeing this show, I think I have it figured out now. Well, that was the nicest thing anybody could say.
It seems like in some ways a theme. Here's some names. Let me drop them. It is, Joe Coy was just here. Jay Moore was just here.
Oh, my God, all big names.
Well, but they're people, and the names aside, they tell similar stories.
Do they?
In that their shows, comedy or otherwise, are helpful to other people, and that's their commitment, but it's also therapy and catharsis for them.
Right.
Like, to continue to tell their story. 100%. Is that fair to say that?
I would say yes, sir.
All right, so what's next?
What's next?
I mean, you haven't done enough. Like, you got some time. This little New York show. You know,
well, you know, they're talking about touring it. That could happen. We're talking about potentially doing it as a special on a streaming service. That could happen. But ultimately, you know, I'm still a half a step away from Broadway. We're off Broadway. We're at 50th and 8th. You have to have a theater that's more than 499 seats. And so I'm looking at maybe, I don't expect to get a lead, but a tiny part on Broadway would be fun. I mean, maybe our show could even transfer to Broadway. Who knows? But I never give up. You know, I don't accept the word no. I don't accept, you know. And it's funny. When people give you advice, sometimes you don't want to accept it. There was a man by the name of Johnny Olson. Johnny Olson announced every game show for Goodson Todman for 20 or 30 years. And he passed away. And everybody wanted to replace him for a couple of reasons. One, the money was going to be great, and he had a lot of shows. And Price is Right was the main show. And I was friends with Bob Barker because I wrote a show called Truth or Consequences the last year he hosted it.
Your name drops are a lot better than mine.
And I called up Barker and I said, I want to audition for Johnny's job. And he said, Mark, absolutely not. And I said, why? I was like taken aback by that. And he said, you're not an announcer. You're a host. I'm not even going to give you the opportunity to do that. Okay. And I thought, initially, but then you know what? I'm glad he said that because that may have trapped me in an area that I would have never gotten out of. And he was wise enough and astute enough to say, I could do that, but I'm not going to allow you to do it. So you have to have mentors who understand what it is that you want to do and take it to the next step. I mean, I'd love to talk to Joe Coy. I don't know if you broke the conversation about him recently doing the Golden Globes and everybody bashing him. If it, people only knew how hard that job was. He had 2 weeks to put a script together where I just saw a thing on CBS Sunday Mornings where Jimmy Kimmel had 4 months to do the monologue for the Oscars. 4 months, 2 weeks. Come on, give me a break.
You know what was interesting about Joe Coy? And at that point, I think he was kind of all talked out about that particular topic. But what was interesting about him is, much like you, he seemed unfazed. Like, it clearly, I mean, it bothered him.
It has to.
You know, it would have to bother him. But this guy is just, again, much like you seem, like we've just met, like, this guy is living his life, and he's happy every day.
And he's great at it.
That this is the life you get to live.
And he sells out 20,000 seat arenas every night.
Yeah.
He's going to be here. Where is he playing in Philly? I forget.
He's at the Wells Fargo.
Wells Fargo. Well, yeah. Okay. That ain't a small venue.
And that Allen Iverson and Joe Coy. Selling him out.
He's selling him out. Yeah. But I bet Joe Coy has more money than Allen Iverson. That's for sure.
We already joked about this. I'm still trying to get a new selfie stick. So however much money the folks have,
you know,
like,
I can help
we'll
you out.
See. Like, I don't count other people's money. I want to remind the folks who are watching on Fox 29 Live on Fox Local. We decided to have some fun today and do a live episode of The Pulse, the behind the scenes. That's what you've been watching.
We got 3 more minutes on it.
We got 3 more minutes on Fox 29 Live. Mr. Mark Summers agreed to do this, and we're just having some fun. We hope you are as well.
For you know why you're successful?
Tell me, am I successful?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Tell me why.
Well, I tell you why. Because you do your homework, okay, and you listen. And I remember being on the Joan Rivers show, and I was supposed to be looking at Joan, but the whole time she was looking over here at the cue cards, and she wasn't listening to me at all. You're listening, you're taking notes, and I would venture to say that that pad that you have with a million things on it, you haven't gone to, because you're talking to me about what we just talked about, and that's why you're a good host.
I appreciate that.
It's true.
I would almost end the show, but they're telling us.
How much time do we have?
That seems like, right. Like, thanks for watching.
2 minutes on live.
Right. A couple things as we go ahead and do wrap things up.
Yes, sir.
We like, because the theme of The Pulse is use your voice for good and trying to see how people are doing those positive things.
Right.
I know that you've been involved with a lot of different work with charity, kind of helping people out. So start there. Like, what are the things that are important to you, and why is it important that you
Alex's
do it?
Lemonade Stand, based here in Philadelphia. I became a member of the board maybe 15 years ago. And that organization is amazing. The money goes where it should go, to the kids and to the hospitals, and there aren't a lot of executives making a boatload of money. I've been to those board meetings, and we make sure that that doesn't happen. So that's important to me. Educating people about OCD has been fantastic via the show and other things. I've been a national spokesperson for the Obsessive Compulsive Foundation for a couple of years. And as I say, paying it forward, at the end of the show, there are people who meet you at the stage door, and everybody has a story. And you can't just go, hey, that's nice, and move on. You got to give them the time. Either they grew up watching me and something that I did affected their lives. And you got to learn not to blow people off. I don't care. You got a dinner appointment in 10 minutes? They'll wait. Those people stayed outside that door for an extra 20 or 30 minutes because they wanted to have a conversation. That's important to me, and that's special, the fact that anybody wants to stay afterwards and have that conversation. So this is kind of – I'm a golden rule guy. Treat others as you want to be treated. But here's the other line that I live by. It's nice to be important, but it's more important to be nice. And that's how I live my life.
I normally ask people to end with, what does the concept of use your voice for good mean to you? But I think you just did, you know, so I guess that we can leave it there. I appreciate you doing this. This was fun.
Thank you. It was fun for me, too. I mean, it's very footloose and fancy free here. And we got to talk. We got to laugh. And I wish you continued success, sir.
Thank you very much. My pleasure. Mr. Mark Summers. Thank you. Guys, thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Pulse with Bill Anderson podcast, today with Mark Summers. And it was interesting for you listening because we did something a little bit different. We also were live streaming the behind the scenes on Fox Local app. So that's what you heard as I was addressing the camera or addressing people off camera. And I encourage all of you to make sure you go download the Fox Local app because you can see those types of things. We'll do the show live sometimes. I also encourage you to head on over to YouTube or other places where you can see all of the past episodes. Hit me up on social media at Bill A. Fox 29. This was just fun. I enjoyed it, and I hope you did as well. I leave you as I always do, reminding you whenever you can, use your voice for good and have a good one.